Chandrakor! Chandrakor!
Louis Deathstalker came racing out of the House of Parliament with his sword and his gun in his hands, roaring his ancient family battle cry. Certain elements in the crowd recognized him immediately. They'd been waiting for him to appear. Two of them opened fire with disruptors, but Louis had learned from Veronica May's fate and had his force shield on his arm. The energy bolts ricocheted harmlessly away, and then he was in and among the surging crowd and shielded from further disruptor fire. The crowd turned on Louis, striking out with knives and clubs and even broken bottles. Louis struck out with his sword, cutting down anyone who came at him with a weapon in hand. His every blow was a killing stroke, and there was no mercy or compassion in him as he forced a bloody path through the press of bodies to reach those who had opened fire on him. They knew what was really going on here, and Louis was determined to get answers out of them before he killed them for what they had done to his friends. Many of the militants turned and ran rather than face him, but some stood their ground and smiled calm, professional smiles as they hefted their weapons. Killing Paragons proved easier than they had anticipated. Killing a Deathstalker was nothing to them. Louis hit them like God's own thunderbolt. He tore into the waiting assassins like an executioner, like death incarnate, pitiless and unforgiving, and they could not stand against him. He fired his disruptor at point-blank range, and the energy bolt seared through two assassins' bodies before it was soaked up by the milling crowd behind them. Louis beat aside the sword of the next man to reach him and opened up his belly with a sideways sweep of his blade. The assassin fell to his knees, dropping his sword as he tried to stuff his guts back into the gaping wound. Louis swept past him, thrusting and cutting with terrible speed, parrying the blades that came at him from all sides on his force shield. All too soon, there was no one left prepared to face him, despite their wages and their orders, and the few assassins still alive turned to flee. Louis cut them down from behind until only one was left. He kicked that man's feet out from under him and stamped on his hand till he let go of his sword. The assassin tried to crawl away. Louis leaned over him, and the man turned suddenly and cut at Louis's exposed side with a hidden dagger. Louis slapped the knife out of his hand with almost contemptuous ease, turned off his force shield to save the power left in the energy crystal, grabbed a handful of the assassin's blood-red church tunic, and hauled him to his feet. The man struggled and tried to pull away. Louis pulled him close and headbutted him in the face. All the fight went out of the assassin as his nose broke and blood flowed down his face. He would have collapsed if Louis hadn't held him up. Louis pushed his face into the shattered visage of his enemy.
You're a pro. What are you doing here?
Who paid you to be here? Who organized all this?
I don't...
A disruptor beam hit the assassin's head, fired from somewhere else in the crowd, and the head exploded in a red spray of vaporized brains and bone, spraying blood across Louis's face. He dropped the headless body and looked quickly about for whomever had fired the shot. But whoever silenced the assassin was long gone, lost in the roiling crowd. Louis glared about him, and everyone fell back, or tried to. Maddened as they were by bloodlust and the shouted slogans of the agent's provocateur, there wasn't a man or woman there crazy enough to take on the Deathstalker. Louis's ugly face was uglier than ever now, and it had nothing to do with the dead man's blood and brains spattering his face. He strode through the crowd.
Lay down your weapons! Drop your weapons and surrender! No!
Most did. Those who didn't, or didn't do it fast enough, he cut down without a moment's thought. He had gone beyond peacekeeping or even Paragon's work. This was revenge now. This was simple butchery, designed to intimidate and terrify those around him. Wherever the Deathstalker walked, the riot was over. But he was only one man. He couldn't be everywhere. Hundreds, thousands of maddened militants still stamped back and forth, attacking anyone that represented authority.
Deathstalker!
Emma Steele emerged from the fray to guard Louis's back. Her armor was battered and splashed with blood, some of it her own. And what was left of her proud purple cloak hung in tatters from her shoulders. A near miss from the disruptor bolt had burned away all the hair on one side of her head, but her face was still cool and controlled. And her sword rose and fell with calm efficiency as she cut her way through the baying crowd to reach the Deathstalker. She was frowning just a little, as though considering some straightforward but distasteful problem. She moved in behind Louis to guard his back, and he didn't even notice she was there. He strode through the crowd, cutting down anyone stupid enough to get in his way, glaring about him with cold predator's eyes as he tried to spot the people still whipping up the mob's passions with just the right inflammatory words. When he could get a clear line, he shot them cleanly with his disruptor, but most of them saw him coming and hurried to hide themselves in the body of the crowd. And then, when there was no clear shot, Lewis would shoot through other people to be sure of hitting his target. He wasn't a paragon or even a champion now. He was a Deathstalker, avenging his fallen friends and comrades, and he would consider all the terrible things he had done later, when he could allow himself to feel again. And yet all the time he was fighting and killing, one part of him was still thinking fiercely, racking his brains for some other alternative, searching desperately for some other way to stop the violence, the madness, some way to bring the mob under control without having to kill so many of them. But there was no other way. No Tanglefields here, no sleep gas, nothing but blood and slaughter, and his duty. His duty as a paragon, as a champion, as a Deathstalker, to defend Parliament, to try and keep the mob occupied until the army could arrive, even if it meant his life.
Deathstalker! Please help me, please!
Lewis looked around sharply, and there on the edge of the crowd, a man had fallen on his knees, one hand extended pleadingly. Lewis went to him, because for Lewis, rescuing the victims had always been more important than punishing the guilty. The crowd seemed to scatter before him, and no one blocked his way as he left the riot behind him. Emma Steele tried to follow him, but the crowd closed between her and Lewis and would not part for her, and soon she was fighting for her life against attacks that came from every direction. Lewis never knew, intent on reaching the man before him. He holstered his gun and put a hand out to the kneeling man, hauling him to his feet. Up close, the man didn't seem to be injured.
Who are you?
I'm Brett, and you need to get me away from here. I got caught up in the riot and couldn't get away. You need to get me to safety.
Yes, I need to get you out of here.
Brett gritted his teeth against the headache that was all but blinding him as he concentrated his limited esp on influencing the Deathstalker. It was hard keeping a grip on the champion's mind. It threatened constantly to pull out of his grasp, fighting fiercely against something it didn't even know was there. Red persevered, knowing what Finn Durandal would do to him if he failed.
Here!
He took Lewis by the arm and guided him away down the side street, leaving the riot behind. The Deathstalker went, scowling as he tried to figure out why, and neither he nor Brett noticed the single camera that floated curiously after them. Brett stumbled as his headache increased, and he almost fell. He could feel the Deathstalker pulling free of his control.
Deathstalker!
And then Rose Constantine stepped smiling out of the shadows, with her sword in hand. Brett relaxed his mental hold. Lewis shook his head and looked quickly about him, suddenly himself again. He ignored the man collapsed at his side, bleeding freely from his nostrils. He knew Rose Constantine, and he knew now why he'd been brought here. To face the one assassin who might actually give him a run for his money.
So, the wild roars of the arenas. Can't say I'm a fan. I suppose I should be flattered that they thought they needed someone like you to stop me. But to be honest, I don't have the time right now. I have more important things I need to be doing. So, let's get this over with, so I can get back to work.
You're not going anywhere, Deathstalker. I'm here to kill you. You're my special treat. I was promised a chance at you for being such a good girl. Come to me, my Deathstalker. I'm going to cut your heart out and eat it.
Oh, it said you were crazy. I don't have time for this.
He turned away from her, heading back towards the riot and the roiling mob. Rose lunged after him, her face darkening with rage.
Don't you dare turn your back on me, Deathstalker!
And Lewis turned back, his energy gun in his hand. He had no intention of dueling with a psychopath. Somehow, Rose darted to one side at the very last moment, and the energy beam barely clipped her side. Burning away the red leathers over her ribs, she plunged on, sword in hand, ignoring the pain. Lewis brought up his blade just in time to parry a vicious blow that would have sheared his head from his shoulders, and his whole arm shuddered with the impact. The champion and the Wild Rose went blade to blade, face to face, neither of them giving an inch.
Holy fuck, holy fuck, holy fuck, holy fuck.
Red Random scuttled away on all fours, watching wide-eyed as two killing machines crashed together and would not yield. After a while, they tired of direct assault and circled each other slowly, swords darting out to test each other's defenses, probing for weakness in defense or attack, studying the opponent's strengths and style, looking always for the opening or blind spot that would allow a killing stroke. Rose was grinning widely now, her eyes sparkling. She discovered a new thrill, fighting someone who might actually be her equal. It had been a long, long time since Rose had considered herself in any real danger in a fight, and she delighted in the new sensation, glorying in a real challenge at last. Lewis's ugly face was cold and focused, studying Rose like a new species of insect that might bite or sting him to death, given a chance. He moved smoothly onto the defensive, parrying Rose's increasingly frenzied attacks, watching and learning, until he decided he knew all he needed to know. He moved swiftly from defense to attack, his blade moving so fast now that Brett couldn't even follow it. Step by step, Lewis drove Rose back. And it was his blade that drew first blood, a long, thin cut just above Rose's right cheekbone. Blood ran down her pale skin, and her tongue darted out of the corner of her mouth to catch it. She looked at Lewis with sick, loving eyes. Her scarlet smile was terribly wide now, her heart leaping in her chest. She stamped and thrust and parried. Rose Constantine knew she was very close to death now, and she couldn't have been happier. She fought back, calling on all her strength and speed and years of experience, and she dueled the Deathstalker to a standstill. They went head to head, the trained warrior and the gifted psychopath, the champion and the Wild Rose, masters of their art. Equally matched, equally skilled. One driven by a lust for murder, the other by a need for justice and revenge. They both stood their ground and would not be moved. Their blades slamming together again and again, sparks flying in the air. And there was no way of telling which way it might have gone when Brett Random drew a concealed disruptor. Even in the middle of the greatest sword fight of his life, Lewis's instincts were still good. He sensed as much as saw Brett draw his disruptor and was already turning when the gun fired.
No!
The energy beam punched clean through his right side and out his back, boring a burning hole right through ribs and stomach and kidney. The impact threw Lewis to the ground, his sword flying from suddenly weak fingers. He lay there, shaking and twitching, breathing hard, trying to draw his own gun from its holster, but his arm wouldn't obey him. He gritted his teeth against the awful pain and forced his hand slowly towards his side, expecting Rose's death blow at any moment. But when he glanced across through pain-filled eyes, it was to see Rose and Brett sprawling with a vicious blow to the head. She stooped over him with her sword at his throat.
Mine! He was mine! Mine to kill!
It was orders, Rose! His orders! He would have killed you! You were losing! I had my orders! Now, just cut his throat. And let's get the hell out of here.
Rose looked back at Lewis, who'd got his hand to his gun at last and was trying to find the strength to draw it. She scowled.
I can't kill him. Not like this. He's the Deathstalker. I'm not a butcher.
Fred scrambled to his feet, keeping a safe distance between himself and the Wild Rose.
You have to do it, Rose. It's orders. His orders.
But still she hesitated, her eyes doubtful, considering a matter that was new and strange to her. When it was right to kill, and when it was not. In her own troubled way, Rose had always considered herself to be an honorable person. Not just a fighter, but a warrior. And for all her joy in the act of slaughter, there were still some things that were right, and some that were not. She couldn't kill the Deathstalker while he was helpless, if only because it wouldn't be fun anymore. And while she was still hesitating, a huge dark figure loomed suddenly out of the shadows of a side alley.
Move, Brett!
Rose's hand went immediately to the gun on her hip, But Saturday the Reptiloid was upon her before she could draw it. He loomed over her, 8 feet of gleaming green scales and muscles, showing all his pointed teeth and a wide, terrible smile. He slapped her aside with one of his deceptively small forearms, and the force of the blow sent her flying a dozen feet down the street. She hit the ground hard, all the breath knocked out of her. But still she hung on to her sword. Brett was there beside her in a moment, dragging her to her feet.
We have to get out of here, Rose. Now, we don't stand a chance against something like that, and we can't afford to be captured.
Rose stumbled along beside him, too stunned even to argue. She'd never encountered anything so big and strong and fast before, not even the Grendel. She was smiling again as she and Brett ran down the street. Next time, she'd be prepared, and the Reptiloid would get what was coming to it. She could use some luggage of that particular shade of green. It was good to know there were still some real challenges in the world. She and Brett ran down the street, leaning on each other, and it was hard to tell who was supporting whom. Saturday stared after them, and then bent over Lewis. He grabbed the Deathstalker by the shoulder and lifted him half off the ground so he could study the extent of his injuries. Lewis almost fainted from the pain. Saturday let him fall back again.
I know you. King's Champion, Deathstalker, yes? Is this a mortal wound for your kind? Should I avenge you or go for help? Advise me, King's Champion, what should I do?
Stop the riot.
Lewis's head was full of sound and light, and it was hard to make his mouth work. The world seemed very far away. He was cold, his whole body shuddering. Shock. He gritted his teeth. This was going to hurt.
Get me on my feet, Sir Reptiloid.
All right.
Saturday hauled him up easily and supported Lewis's weight with one forearm, while the Deathstalker leaned against the Reptiloid's armored hide. He realized vaguely that the sound of the mob had changed. There was still shouting and screaming, but it was more fear than rage now, already dying away, and the slogan shouters were conspicuously silent. Lewis pushed himself away from the Reptiloid, the effort bringing beads of sweat to his face. He looked back at the crowd and saw that they were standing still, staring up into the sky. Lewis looked up too and smiled shakily as he saw the sky was full of gravity barges. The troops had finally arrived.
Lay down your weapons and surrender. Resistance will be met with force.
The ranks of energy guns on the barges moved ostentatiously to follow those who didn't respond quickly enough. Everywhere, the fighting was stopped. The riot was over. Lewis closed his eyes for a moment in relief, and then looked up at the Reptiloid.
Saturday, get me into the house. Regeneration machine.
As you wish.
He looked wistfully at what had once been a mob, but was now just a crowd with its hands in the air.
I came here specially to show pure humanity just what an alien can do when it got annoyed enough. But I seem to have missed my chance. Pity. I was really hoping to find out what a Neumann tasted like. Never mind. Bound to be you next time.
He looked down and realized Lewis was no longer listening to him, and was, in fact, barely conscious. Saturday shrugged his broad green shoulders. He draped Lewis casually over one shoulder.
Up you go!
And singing an old tribal song in his own language, strode swiftly towards the house. People hurried to get out of his way.
No!
Lewis!
A single media camera had followed Lewis, its operator curious as to why the Deathstalker had chosen to leave the fray. And when the Deathstalker went head-to-head with the Wild Rose, the camera operator realized he'd stumbled onto one hell of an exclusive. The whole Empire watched the duel live and saw Lewis struck down by treachery.
Lewis!
The king was on his feet in a moment, Jessamine clinging to his arm. The house was silent, watching the king uncertainly. Anne was yelling in his ear.
Stay calm. You can't lose it now.
But he wasn't listening. Douglas stepped down from the raised dais and onto the floor of the house, almost dragging Jessamine along with him. He looked at the exit, and the house was very still as everyone waited to see what he would do.
You can't go, Douglas. Listen to me. You're the king. Your place is here.
He's my friend. They've killed my friend. I have to go to him.
You have to stay here and keep this place from falling apart. You don't know he's dead. You have a duty not to put yourself into danger. Who's to say Lewis wasn't shot deliberately to try and tempt you into leaving the safety of the house? Lewis wouldn't want to be responsible for your death. Don't play into their hands, Douglas. There'll be time for vengeance later. You have to stay here. Keep the MPs from panicking and agreeing to something stupid. You have to put your feelings aside for now. You have to set an example for the house. You're the king.
What kind of king abandons his friend? His dying friend.
One who knows his duty. Please, Douglas. You can't go out there. It's what they want, and you know it. If they kill you, they win. And Lewis will have died for nothing.
Douglas turned slowly and looked back at his golden throne. And in that moment, it seemed more like a trap than anything else. But because he was the king and a Campbell, and a man who had always known his duty, King Douglas walked slowly back across the floor of the house, stepped back up onto the dais, and sat down upon his throne again. He looked out over the silent house with cold, unforgiving eyes, and didn't even notice Jessamine was gone. He looked at the MPs and they looked back, waiting to see what he would do. Douglas turned away from them and looked at the Esper representative. The young man who spoke for the Oversoul stood up to meet his king's gaze.
When I speak, the Oversoul hears. All of you, yes?
We all hear you. What do you wish of the Esper Gestalt, Your Majesty?
Stop the riot. Do whatever you have to, whatever it takes, but stop the killing.
No!
Mira Puri was quickly on her feet. Other MPs rose to join her.
Your Majesty, I protest. We can't use Espers against humans.
Just shut up! You had your chance and you did nothing. Nothing but squabble and bicker while good men and women died. I have done what was necessary, made a decision where you couldn't. That is what a speaker and a king is for, isn't it?
You had no right to commit us to this.
I don't want to hear it.
It is done. The Oversoul has teleported troops and gravity barges directly into position outside the house. Telepaths are quieting and controlling the minds of those who still feel like fighting. It's all over now, Your Majesty.
Damn you, Douglas. What have you done?
When Emma Steele became separated from Lewis Deathstalker by the mob, she was briefly lost, but she quickly spotted another familiar face in Paragon armor and purple cloak. She fought her way through the packed crowd, cutting down men and women with crazed faces and mostly improvised weapons, trying not to let the madness of the mob infect her. It would be only too easy to give in to anger, to kill for revenge instead of justice, but Emma Steele was a Paragon, and Paragons didn't do that. She was outnumbered, betrayed, surrounded by maddened rioters who would have torn her to pieces with their bare hands if they could, but still she fought with cold calculation, killing only when she had to survive. Right now she was concentrating on getting to someone she could trust to guard her back. The Paragon she'd spotted was just ahead now, fighting with skill and precision, actually smiling slightly in the face of impossible odds. Not that she would have expected anything less from him. Emma didn't know many Paragons by sight, but everyone knew the classically handsome features of Finn Durandal. Finn didn't see her coming, being more preoccupied with looking good. He'd come out into the crowd because it would have looked odd, if not downright suspicious, if he hadn't. There was no plausible way he could have avoided knowing about the riot or the assault on his fellow Paragons, and if he hadn't put in an appearance, people would have asked questions. They might even have begun to doubt him, but he couldn't have that. He still needed to be seen as the selfless hero they'd always thought he was. Of course, there was no point in taking unnecessary risks. The people he'd chosen to fight were actually his own people, Hand-picked bravos, recruited from the smoke-filled dens of the rookery, paid handsomely to put up a good fight and lose impressively, right where the camera could see it, and protect him from the genuine rioters while they did it. They blended in easily with the rest of the mob, largely anonymous in their previously supplied Crimson Church outfits, and engaged Finn in lengthy, flashy, but essentially safe duels that the watching home audience would eat up with spoons. And if none of these apparent bad guys were actually dying, well, that just showed how merciful and compassionate the great Finn Durandal could be. It was all going very well, until Emma Steele suddenly appeared out of nowhere, bound and determined to fight at his side. He knew her reputation. Everyone did. He couldn't fake a duel in front of her and hope to get away with it. So he shrugged mentally and killed his own people. He did it quickly before they could realize he wasn't pretending anymore, but even so, he thought Emma gave him a strange, almost puzzled look before the last of the bravos was dead, and the real crowd closed in around them, and they were both fighting for their lives. Finn was just planning the path that would take him, apparently by chance, to the edge of the roiling crowd in relative safety, when there was a roar of displaced air above him, and he looked up sharply to see military gravity barges appearing in the sky above the riot. Huge dark vessels, bristling with rows of disruptor cannon, every one of them targeted on the crowd below.
Lay down your weapons and surrender! Resistance will be met with force!
Finn and Emma stood back to back, sword and gun still in hand, looking quickly about them to see which way the crowd would go. The mob had found a taste for blood and just might make a fight of it. And then the Espers appeared, dozens of them, hovering in midair beside and among the gravity barges, looking down on the mass of mere humanity below them, like so many angels standing in judgment. Their eyes glowed bright as suns as they hung unsupported on the air, the sheer sense of their presence almost overwhelming.
Put down your weapons. Stand still. Wait quietly for the peacekeepers to come and take you away.
All through the crowd, people dropped guns and swords and improvised weapons, their hands opening in spite of themselves. The compulsion in their minds shut down everything but their most basic thought processes. Their faces were blank, their eyes empty, all rage and passion and individuality gone in a moment. Only the surviving peacekeepers, security forces, and paragons remained untouched, exempt from the telepathic gas. Emma slowly lowered her sword, looking wonderingly about her. Finn put away his sword and gun and walked away unnoticed. Peacekeepers began slowly making their way through the calm, unresponsive crowd, searching out the troublemakers and rabble-rousers and collecting discarded weapons by the armful. The telepaths walked across the air above the crowd, sifting through minds in search of guilty secrets. Once that would have been an illegal, unthinkable act, but the Oversoul had the king's authority, for the moment, and men and women who only a moment before had been willing to fight and die for the cause they believed in, now stood listlessly, helplessly, and let them do it. They were still standing there some time later when the troops came to lead them off in restraints, and the medics came to treat the injured and name-tag the dead. There were a lot of dead. A surprisingly large number were paragons. The beloved heroes of the Empire now lay still and silent on the bloody ground, wrapped in the tatters of their proud purple cloaks. Parliament and the king watched in silence as the crowd stood placidly, their eyes as blank and uncomplaining as the beasts of the field. Peacekeepers took away certain individuals that the media coverage had revealed as instigating or orchestrating the troubles. Sometimes the peacekeepers hit or beat these people, or pushed them violently to the ground and kicked them, and they took it silently, unable to complain or protect themselves. There was still a lot of anger in the air from those who had survived the madness of the mob. Most of the crowd would go to improvised prison compounds the military were hastily putting together on the outskirts of the city. There would be time for courts and laws and rights later. Most would probably just be released with a warning. Clogging up the courts to no great effect wouldn't serve anyone. And besides, the church and the Neumann had proved themselves a powerful force. It wouldn't do to antagonize them unnecessarily. None of the MPs said that out loud. They didn't have to. They just sat and watched as the crowd was silently dismantled and led away. Up above them, hanging on the sky like they were nailed there, the espers broadcast tranquility, the influence of their powerful minds holding the crowd effortlessly in their grasp. Some of them were smiling. They didn't look like angels anymore. If anything, they looked like birds of prey, waiting for some slow and stupid animal to die.
Espers, controlling human minds, putting their thoughts into other people's minds, taking away their free will, making slaves of them. Does this perhaps remind your majesty of anything? Of what the elves did in the arenas only a few weeks ago?
The elves were responsible for acts of terrorism and murder. The Oversoul was responsible for stopping acts of terrorism and murder.
That's not how the people in the street will see it. Some things are just wrong, no matter who does it or why.
Then the hell with them, and the hell with you.
Douglas rose sharply to his feet.
I'd do it again in a moment. They were killing my paragons, my colleagues and my friends. And my champion may be dead too. I should have been there at his side. You want my crown, honored members? You can have it!
He took the crown off and put it on the throne.
I did what was necessary. I've always been able to do what was necessary. That's what a paragon does. I'm going to see what's happened to my friend Lewis. You can send someone later to tell me if I'm still king. Maybe I'll care later.
You can't leave. This house is still in session. We haven't dismissed you yet.
Douglas looked at Markham, and the MP flinched despite himself and looked away. Douglas looked around the house, and everywhere people were unable to meet his dark and dangerous gaze. He smiled briefly.
God damn you all to hell. All of you together aren't worth one of the paragons who fell defending you. What has the Empire become? What have we become that such a price was necessary? There's a madness in the streets, a sickness in the soul, and I fear it has infected us. Make your compromise deals with the Church and the Neumann. Protect yourselves. I can't stop you, but I don't have to watch you do it. I still have my pride.
He turned his back on them and walked out of the house, ignoring the uproar of voices that broke out behind him. Outside, Anne was waiting for him.
Any news of Lewis?
He's been brought in. They've got him in the infirmary.
Douglas set off down the corridor, and Anne padded along beside him.
They've got him in a regeneration tank. Douglas, the odds aren't good. He took a disruptor bolt at point-blank range.
But is he still alive?
Yes. For the moment, he's still alive.
I should never have let him go out there alone, Anne. I shouldn't have let you stop me going with him.
If you'd gone, you'd be lying in a regen tank beside Lewis, if we were lucky.
I let him down. He was always there for me, and I let him down.
You did the right thing, Douglas.
What's that got to do with anything? Our friend is dying.
I know. I know.
They strode down the corridor together, and people saw their faces and hurried to get out of their way. Lewis was as surprised as anyone when the lid of the regeneration tank rose up and he was still alive. He was even more surprised to discover that the reptiloid Saturday was gone, and there, waiting for him in that cold and empty room, was an utterly distraught Jessamine Flowers. Jessamine saw Lewis trying to sit up in the tank and hurried forward to help him out of it. His legs felt like they belonged to someone else, and he sat down suddenly beside the tank, feeling at his side where the ragged hole had been, and Jessamine threw her arms around him and buried her face in his shoulder. They sat together, holding each other tightly.
Oh, God! I thought I'd lost you!
Her face was pressed against his shoulder.
I saw them shoot you, and it was as though someone had shot me, too. I couldn't breathe. When they told me the alien was bringing you in, I came straight here. I couldn't believe the state you were in. There was a hole in your side the size of my fist. You were barely breathing. I was so sure I was going to lose you.
The regen tank does good work.
Lewis's face was buried in her golden hair. It smelled good. It smelled like life and happiness.
But even so, I hate to think how close it must have been. Even regeneration tanks can't work miracles. But I couldn't die, Jess. I couldn't die and leave you behind. Not after I'd finally found you. Found the only woman I ever loved.
They pulled back a little, so they could look one another in the face. Jessamine's face was almost ugly, blotched with color, her eyes puffy from crying so hard. Lewis's face seemed somehow harsher, even with the blood and brains cleaned away, as though his brush with death had knocked all the easiness out of it. They were holding each other's hands so tightly, their knuckles were white.
You mean that? You love me?
With all my heart, Jess. It's wrong. I know it's wrong. I know it can't go anywhere. But I don't care.
I don't care either. I love you, Lewis. So many men have passed through my life, but you're the only one I ever cried over. The only one who ever mattered to me.
You're everything I ever wanted, Jess. Everything I thought love would be. Typical Deathstalker look. To love the one woman I can't ever have.
Can't? Lewis!
No, Jessamine. Listen to me. One of us has to be strong. Strong enough to do the right thing. You're going to marry my best friend. It's all arranged. All of humanity wants this marriage. Douglas wants it. And I'd rather die than hurt him. You're going to be his queen. The Empire needs you.
I need you, Lewis. Doesn't that matter? Doesn't that mean anything?
Oh, it means everything. But we can't let it matter. I'll leave. Go away. Marry Douglas and be happy, Jessamine.
Lewis, I can't!
You must. I could not love thee half so much. Loved I not honor more. I can't. I won't betray my friend. My king.
It's not fair! It's not fair!
No, it isn't. Let me go, Jess. Let me leave. Well, I still have the strength to do it.
Where will you go? What will you do?
I don't know. Oh, God. I don't know anything anymore.
They moved forward into each other's arms again, murmured their love for a while, and finally, tenderly, kissed each other goodbye. And that was how Douglas and Anne found them. For a long while, the two of them just stood there, watching, silent.
Jessamine?
Lewis immediately let go of Jessamine and looked around sharply. Jessamine held on a moment longer, her eyes closed, as though she could deny what was happening. But then her innate inner discipline reestablished itself, and she let go. She'd always been able to be strong when she had to be. She looked around unhurriedly, her face calm and composed, though there was no hiding her puffy eyes or the damage to her makeup. Lewis rose to his feet, just a little unsteadily. He took a step toward Douglas and then stopped, held where he was by what he saw in his friend's face. Jessamine looked accusingly at Anne, but Anne shook her head slightly. She hadn't told Douglas what she'd seen earlier.
Lewis.
It was like a slap in the face.
What have you done, Lewis? I sent you out to stop a riot, not get involved in one. What did you think you were doing? How many people did you kill out there? Do you even know? I made you my champion. It's important that you're seen to be impartial at all times. You can't get involved in political struggles. Once it was clear they weren't going to listen to you, you should have withdrawn, not drawn your weapons against civilians. You looked like a butcher. My butcher.
Those civilians were killing paragons.
Lewis met Douglas's gaze steadily.
They would have killed me. They did their best.
You made a bad situation worse. I had to call on the Oversoul to shut the riot down. God knows what the Espers will want in return for that service. All because you failed me, Lewis.
What was I supposed to do? They'd gone crazy, all of them. I can't work a miracle every time.
Then what use are you to me? I need to be able to rely on you, Lewis.
You can. You know you can, Douglas. You know I'll do the right thing.
I don't know anything anymore! I was ready to give up my crown for you, Lewis, and then I come here and I find you...
Douglas looked at Jessamine for the first time.
How can I do what I'm supposed to do when I can't trust anyone anymore?
He turned abruptly and stalked out of the infirmary, his back very straight, his head held high, but none of them could see his face. Jessamine squeezed Lewis's hand once and then hurried after Douglas. Lewis sat down again, his legs all but collapsing under him, and he stared at the floor, broken and hurt beyond anything Brett Random's disruptor could have managed. Anne walked slowly over and sat down beside him. She leaned back against the open regeneration machine.
Some days, things wouldn't go right if you bribed them.
Maybe I should have died. Maybe that would have been best for everyone.
Oh, shut up. I'll work something out, though God alone knows what or how. You couldn't have screwed this up worse if you tried, Lewis. You must know this can't go anywhere. There's no possible future for you and Jessamine. Too many vested interests have committed themselves to the new king and queen. The momentum we've built up is unstoppable. Any change now, and there'd be riots in cities all over the Empire. A royal wedding, a golden couple for a golden age, could heal the rifts in society, change the atmosphere, get people talking again instead of shouting. You can't be allowed to interfere, Lewis. Too much depends on everything going ahead as planned.
I know. I'd already decided I was going to leave. Get the hell off planet and disappear. Let someone else be the champion. I never wanted the job anyway. Let Finn have it. He'll do a better job. He understands politics. And he's never had any bothersome emotions to get in the way.
You can't resign as champion. And you can't leave. So far, there hasn't been even a whisper of gossip, and we have to keep it that way. You just up and go, abandoning your best friend on the eve of his wedding, and people would be bound to wonder why. Sooner or later, someone would discover the truth. Someone always does. And a scandal like this would be the end of Douglas as king. All the various causes and politicians would have a field day. I don't even want to think about what it would do to the balance we've been carefully creating in Parliament. No, Lewis, you're not going anywhere. You're going to stay here and tough it out. Until we can figure out some way for you to credibly retire and disappear into the background. Maybe a family emergency. Viramon's a long way from anywhere. Just give me time to think. I'll come up with something. In the meantime, stay away from Jessamine. If you're at the house together, don't even look at her, unless you're forced to. I'd say act naturally, but you're not that good of an actor. I'll arrange the schedules to keep the two of you apart as much as I can until she's safely married. Think you can keep it in your trousers until then?
This isn't about sex. This was never about sex. I love her, Anne.
No, you don't. You can't. Too many people would be hurt. The fate of the Empire depends on you doing the right thing. Remember your duty, Deathstalker.
I know my duty. I've always known my bloody duty.
The very steps of Parliament were the scene of the bloodiest displays of civil insurrection.
Back at Finn's place, they were all in their favorite chairs, passing bowls of snacks around, and watching replays of the riot on the big view screen. The news channels were broadcasting uninterrupted coverage, running all the best bits in slow motion, the better to show off all the blood and gore. Nothing like a little death and suffering in close-up to pull in the viewers. Hell, the riot was getting better ratings than Friday night at the arenas. Finn relaxed almost bonelessly in his chair, smiling and nodding, and even applauding some of the best bits. He'd come out of it very well, looking extremely heroic, especially when he cut down his own people right in front of the camera. He couldn't have planned it better. Emma Steele had also come out of it well, her cool and calm composure in the middle of madness making her look very professional. Commentators were already saying that she and Finn should make a great partnership. Finn wasn't so sure. He didn't know just how much Emma might have seen or suspect. She hadn't said anything, either to him or the media, but that was a problem for another day. Right now he was feeling too good. The channel showed Brett shooting Lewis again. The scene changed abruptly to show people holding a candlelight vigil outside the house, praying for the Death Stalker to survive. Finn frowned. He hadn't realized Lewis was so popular. Still, there was no danger of Lewis actually dying and becoming a martyr. Brett had aimed his gun very carefully, following his instructions to make it look as impressive as possible while still missing all the major vital organs. He glanced across at Rose Constantine, sitting scowling in her chair, sulking. Finn studied Rose for a moment. He'd never intended for her to kill Lewis, but of course he couldn't tell her that. The fight had to look natural. She had to be convinced to be convincing. No, Lewis couldn't die yet. Not while Finn had such useful, amusing plans for him. The vid screen showed again the moment when someone in the crowd blew Veronica Mae Savage's head right off, starting the riot. Finn couldn't be more pleased. It was the exact visual image he'd needed to blow everyone's minds, so to speak. It helped that he'd never liked Veronica Mae, but any Paragon would have done. He made a mental note to send the assassin a bonus. Brett had gone back to drinking heavily. He hadn't said a word since he returned. He watched the view screen and took a big handful from the snack bowls when they came his way, but he seemed lost in his own unhappy thoughts. Finn decided he'd better keep a close eye on his new Esper. They watched the news coverage on the view screen for over an hour, switching back and forth between the channels to get a representative angle on the public's perception of the riot and their reactions on how Parliament and the King had handled it. The House was expressing solidarity with the King, for now. A surprisingly large percentage of the viewing public were already expressing their displeasure over the way the powers that be had overreacted. Specifically, they didn't like troops being brought into the city and unleashed on civilians, and they really didn't like the use of espers to control human minds. Comparisons were already being made with the way the despised Empress Lionstone used to do things. And every commentator on every channel was drawing comparisons between the elves and the Oversoul, despite all the soothing words coming from the Esper Center on New Hope. The general public feeling was that the King and Parliament had been heavy-handed in their reaction to a legitimate protest, and that that was what had caused the riot. A lot of people still supported the Church, even if they weren't too sure as yet about the influence of Neumann philosophy within it. There was a lot of public sentiment over the death of so many Paragons, 37 and still counting, but again the general feeling seemed to be that they shouldn't have been there in the first place. Paragons were supposed to deal with crime, not political protest. They were supposed to be the King's justice, not his bully boys. There was no public call for a day of mass mourning, as usually happened when a Paragon fell in the line of duty. Finn found that especially significant. Angelo Bellini turned up late, without even the grace of an apology, but ended up sitting on the edge of his chair, fascinated by the media coverage of the slaughter he'd helped to instigate. It was one thing to work quietly behind the scenes to ensure that everything went to hell on schedule, but quite another to watch the carnage unfold before you. Angelo all but bounced in his chair, his face flushed, breathing heavily. Finn thought Angelo looked a bit like Rose when she was contemplating killing someone horribly. Angelo sensed Finn's gaze on him and looked around, grinning foolishly.
Death and violence and insurrection in the streets. The death of heroes and of ideals. And all of it at my command.
An idea occurred to Angelo, and he scowled suddenly.
I hadn't a plan for the Oversoul getting involved. Could those espers dig our names out of those people's heads?
I planned for everything. No one actually present at the riot has any direct knowledge of me or you. Their instructions came via so many cutouts that the security forces will end up running in circles trying to make sense of it all. My people in the rookery have already set in motion a wide-reaching plan of disinformation. No one's coming after us, Angelo. I have put a lot of thought into this.
Angelo nodded and looked back at the view screen, and immediately all his doubts were forgotten.
I have to congratulate you, Finn. I never knew politics could be such fun. Such a rush. People going out to fight and die at my command. The parade of the endless torn apart, and all because of me. I never knew power could be so intoxicating.
Don't make a mess on the chair, Angelo. You didn't cause this. I did. You merely helped. This is all my plan, my work. And don't you ever forget it.
You couldn't have done it without me. I put the church in a bed with the Neumann. I worked out the logistics for the marches. Those people listen to me, not you.
Finn leaned easily out of his chair. Angelo rocked in his chair and almost fell. He brought up a hand to protect himself from further blows and opened his mouth to protest. And then his eyes met Finn's, and the words turned to dust in his mouth. Finn wasn't angry. He wasn't even excited. But in that moment, he looked cold and controlled and very, very dangerous.
You are my creature, Angelo, mine to do with as I wish. I own you. You can't go back to what you were, and if you ever think to cross me or cultivate ideas above your station, I will destroy your media sainthood overnight and have you removed from your own church in disgrace. I will drag your good name through the gutter and throw you to the wolves. And I will do it the moment you even think of setting your wishes in any way above mine. Or I could just give you to Rose.
Give him to me. The Death Stalker got me all hot. But I never got the chance to finish.
Angelo sank back in his chair and concentrated very quietly on the view screen. Finn just smiled. Brett Random poured himself another large drink from the brandy bottle on the arm of his chair, but it wasn't doing much for him. He took no pleasure from the slaughter and destruction of the riot. He didn't even have anything against the Death Stalker. Good man, from all he'd heard. He was just following Finn's orders when he shot him. Brett hoped, silently, that the Paragon would survive. Once, Lewis's and Brett's ancestors had been friends, partners, heroes fighting side by side against evil. Things must have been simpler then. Brett couldn't help wondering what his legendary ancestors would have made of him. He didn't think they'd have been too impressed. Brett had never been a violent man. He knew the ways of gun and sword because he had to in order to survive growing up in the rookery. But he'd always preferred to work on cons, where no one really got hurt. Even the marks he soaked so thoroughly for money had nothing to really complain about. He always targeted the really rich bastards who could afford to lose what he took from them. He only ever punished the greedy. Until now. Now people were dying because of him. Good people. He drank his brandy in heavy gulps, but it didn't comfort him. His stomach hurt worse than ever. Tension, guilt, and perhaps, just perhaps, the beginning of conscience. First chance he got, he was out of here, running for the horizon like his arse was on fire, and to hell with Finn Bloody Durandal. This wasn't fun anymore, if it ever had been. He looked up from his glass, and there was Rose. Wild Rose, looking thoughtfully at him again. She smiled, and Brett got goose flesh all the way up both arms.
Out of here, definitely. And the sooner, the better.
Finn studied the rising body count being displayed on the view screen and smiled a slow, satisfied grin. He felt all warm and comfortable inside. Everything was going to plan. The commentators were naming this the worst day in the Golden Age's history. Only Finn knew that this, all of this, was just the beginning.
Emma Steele is the new paragon of humanity's homeworld of Logris, but her first day on the job casts suspicion on her partner, the legendary Finn Durandal. Her investigations lead her into direct conflict with a sinister church militant as she risks her life to rescue a fleeing informant from their lethal clutches. Elsewhere, the timorous rogue Brett Random and his scary comrade Rose Constantine are compelled to negotiate on the Durandal's behalf with the terrifying and hideous Uber-espers known as the Spider Harps. And in the royal inner circle, the immovable wills of Louis Deathstalker, the king's champion, and Jessamine Flowers, the king's betrothed, labor in vain against the most irresistible force they've ever known. Or so they think. Deathstalker Legacy, Episode 4, Questionable Choices. Deathstalker Legacy, All Kinds of Betrayal, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2007, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Vanessa Benjamin, Sonny Lasky, Corey James, Colleen Delaney, Bruce Rauscher, Nanette Savard, Jeff Baker, Ken Jackson, Kate Torrey, Christopher Graybill, Michael Replogle, Dolores King-Williams, Thomas Penny, Chris Rowan, Nathaniel Perry, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Vocal editing and graphic audio sound design by Chris Rowan. The Deathstalker Legacy theme was composed by Dan Smith. Additional original music by Chris Rowan. If you enjoyed Deathstalker Legacy, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders, available at roadstops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Graphic Audio presents a breathtaking new adventure series packed with non-stop action and intrigue, celebrating the exploits of an unforgettable protagonist, archaeologist and explorer Anya Creed. Rogue Angel by Alex Archer.
An ancient order tied to the Vatican. A blood fortune buried in the caves of France. A conspiracy of power, greed, and darkest evil. Anya Creed's fascination with the myths and mysteries of the past leads her to a crypt in the caves of France, where the terrifying legend of the Beast of Gévaudan hints at the unimaginable. What she discovers is shattering. An artifact that will seal her destiny. A brotherhood of monks willing to murder to protect their secret. And a powerful black market occultist, desperate to put his own claim to centuries-old blood money. Anya embarks on a high-tension race across Europe and history itself, intent on linking the unholy treachery of the ages with the staggering revelations of the present. But in order to survive, she must deal with the shadowy figures, determined to silence her threat to their very existence. Rogue Angel. Destiny.
Can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for? Just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.